Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Pearl Harbor Day. It is Tuesday, December 7th, 2021, the 80th anniversary of the Empire of Japan's attack on the island of Oahu, Hawaii. Let's never forget that day, 80 years ago. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Our call letters, KVOI, The Voice, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Speaking of the live line, we go to the nation's capital. Terry Bracey, our expert on Washington and governmental affairs, whose unique role in representing Tucson's interests began with a 10-year stint on the staff of the famed Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry was then appointed to sub-cabinet positions by President Carter and subsequently served under four presidents of both parties. He's the founding partner of the respected public affairs firm in the D.C. area, Bracey Tucker Brown, which works on many of the Tucson's and has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. Terry, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing just fine. Unfortunately, winter has arrived.
Uh-oh.
We're supposed to have snow tomorrow, which I don't like. Anyway, I'm having fun on television watching Tommy Lloyd and his Arizona basketball team. I'm blown away by them. Bill, is it a surprise to you?
Kind of. I mean, they're ranked undefeated, and the women's team also in the top 10. They're undefeated, so I think we're the only university in the nation's got two undefeated men and women's teams in the top 10. They're doing great.
Yeah, well, that is, I mean, I think they've got this run and pass offense, which kind of reminds me of the old Boston Celtics, you know, who they just played all out all the time, always fast break with the ball, wore out their opponents. But most of all, they passed very cleverly. I'm so impressed with this team. It's fun to watch them.
Yeah, it is fun to watch. What's going on in Washington isn't really too fun to watch. The Republicans seem to have intensified the attacks on President Biden, even as he's had some big victories. They call him a socialist. What about that, Terry Bracey?
No, Bill, I don't agree with that. He is not a socialist. I think that Biden is a capitalist and always has been, and he's a social democrat who probably falls in line with presidents like Franklin Roosevelt, who gave us Social Security, or President Eisenhower, who built the interstate highway system, or John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, who made war on poverty. So he's a social democrat. He's not a socialist.
And they point to the large investments, the Biden's critics, and they say what we're seeing is, in effect, socialism, Terry.
Well, Bill, we're not. Every economic system has its flaws, and I'd like Shelley to talk about this. And for me, the flaw in the unregulated capitalism system is greed. One of the big jobs of the federal government, in fact, is to protect the capitalism and capital markets by regulating them and assuring us there isn't greed. Starting with money, the Federal Reserve Board regulates how much money is in circulation. The idea to fight inflation and generate jobs at the same time. Sometimes they're not successful, but generally they are. Things like the Federal Aviation Administration carefully monitor the airline industry and the construction and use of commercial airliners, and I think we'll all agree we're safer because of it. You know, you can go, the Securities and Exchange Commission regulates the stock markets, and we know a lot of regulation needs to go on there. So, No, he's not a socialist. He is a social democrat, and we are talking about a different form of capitalism.
But socialism does exist in today's world. What exactly? How would you define it?
Well, they're really just four functioning socialist / communist nations today: China, Cuba, Laos, and Vietnam. China and Vietnam are the success stories. In neither case do the governments control all the means of production as required in socialist theory, but they do command so much control over corporations that they can simply close down multi-billion-dollar corporations in a week if they want to, as China has recently. Social democracies have no such control.
So why label Biden's programs as socialist? Does this play to the choir of certain Republicans?
Well, I mean, they see free childhood preschool as state intervention when others see it as the start of a new competitive industry. They object to $300 child grants to middle-income parents when they fought for a $3 trillion tax cut, 80% of which went to the rich. Republicans also oppose the president requiring use of Medicare to bargain for lower drug prices. And we know drug prices are out of control. Just insulin, for example, would be reduced to $35 a month instead of the thousands people pay. So I don't know, Bill. I just think that, you know, a lot of it is scare tactics.
But the voters seem to like these programs that are being approved.
Yeah, and that's the classic dilemma, isn't it? That so many lies are told about the costs and this and that, and the costs are very substantial, and some of the criticisms are quite reasonable. But when you come down to it, 20% of the public approves of Congress, only 20%. But when you go to the programs here, 75% approve of the program. So time will tell if all this works out.
All right. Biden and Putin met telephonically today. Ukraine has to be at the top of the agenda. Some of your thoughts, Terry Bracey.
I think it's a very scary time. And I think it's scary for other reasons as well. You've got the situation with Taiwan and China. On top of that, you've got the problem with Iran and whether Iran even agrees to go back to a stance of a non-nuclear state. And then you've always got North Korea hanging around, and there are constant problems. So I think it's a very dangerous time in the world. And I think that that it's well that Biden is talking to Putin, because you don't want a war by mistake, because, you know, the Russians are loading up as much as 175,000 troops on the border of the Ukraine. And it's starting to look like wars in our future, but I hope not.
You know, you start talking about nearly 200,000 troops. You're starting to talk about World War II type numbers amassing on a border. And if you've seen the pictures of what's going on with the Ukraine digging trenches, I mean, it looks like a scene out of World War I.
Yeah, it does. And it's strange, because you know that if there's a war between the West and Russia, it ain't going to be settled that way.
No.
It really, it's not. So in a way, I take comfort that they're digging trenches, because if they're just shooting at each other, well, that keeps the those enormous weapons under wraps. But somebody tees up, some kind of nuclear device, some kind of field device. This is why the presidency is such an important place and office, to have total control of use of nuclear weapons.
Oh.
You know, some of us, Bill, are old enough to go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
You bet.
And, And that's why JFK, although he was in office a short time, is rated by historians as one of the top 10 presidents, because he handled the Cuban Missile Crisis and he kept the world out of nuclear war. And every time you see the Russians and the Americans teeing it up, you have to start worrying. But then it's a further worry about China, and it's they're pushing as far as they can go during this era. And a lot of it's being caused because the world is beginning to think that American democracy is on the decline. And this this right wing, you know, kind of movement led by former President Trump is perhaps the most destructive thing that's happened in my lifetime.
On that note, Terry, we will leave it there. I hope you and your lovely family have a great holiday season. We will talk to you early in 2022. Terry, thank you very much.
Happy holidays to everyone, and I look forward to seeing you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Terry Bracey with us from Washington, D.C. Mona's Danish Bakery, getting all ready for the holidays. Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle, and I like to say their cousin to the Kringle, the Danish coffee cake. I love the Danish coffee cake. We brought one in to the station here on Friday, and it went very quickly, as you might suspect. Northeast Corner Swan and Sunrise are open right now for lunch. They open Tuesday through Sunday, 6:30. They begin breakfast. Put in your order now for Christmas. Put in for your Christmas pies, your Christmas dinner rolls, and start the day Christmas morning. What could be better than one of the pastries, the Danish Kringle or a Danish coffee cake? Sounds good to me. The website, monasdanishbakery.com. Coming up next, Shelley Fishman. Shelley is giving me a very enthusiastic two thumbs up here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. And don't forget about Green Things for all of your poinsettias. They grew 25,000 this year. So get over there and start your decorating at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org. pimaanimalcarecenter.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Well, Shelley Fishman, Shell, how are you?
I am well, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for asking. The roller coaster, the up and down roller coaster seems to be getting up.
Up is a good thing, especially on Tuesday.
Up and away. Yep.
We are close to the highs that we hit in November, the all-time record highs.
Mm-hmm.
The market is voting with its bucks, and its bucks say the economy is on the move. We are recovering faster than any other capitalist country in the world. And the market is voting with its dollars and showing tremendous optimism, even in the face of all the uncertainty that Terry so rightly was listing.
Yeah, he was articulating about what a dangerous world this is, you know. And also, I was talking about socialism and calling people socialists and all this name calling. It's not helpful.
You know, name calling is cheap and effective.
Yeah,
right.
It isn't helpful though.
It's not helpful. These names, socialist, you know, you tell me what a socialist is anymore. We conflate that with the concept of communism.
Mm-hmm.
They are not necessarily completely separate, but they are very different. Socialism mm-hmm. is state control of production.
Mm-hmm.
We have some measure of socialism now throughout the world. Certainly we have control and regulation of business by every successful economy in the Western world. We have more of that control evolving in China and in some of the economies that we call developing economies, because government priorities become more and more important to the governments meeting their objectives for those economies. That said, there is nothing wrong with being called a socialist. There is something wrong with being called a communist, because that implies that we're talking about a form of government that is as close to fascistic as anything else. Just,
yes.
You know, just because, you know, the Nazis fought the communist, you know, Soviet Union, doesn't mean that those two forms of government didn't have a lot of things in common.
Certainly.
They were dictatorships.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's the danger.
Yeah.
Government regulation, if it oversteps its bounds, you know, can be a problem, just as greed, if it oversteps its bounds, can be a problem. In fact, where I might fall out of love with what Terry said, he said the problem is greed. The problem isn't greed. We need greed. Greed is good. But greed needs to be countered by government regulation such that the managers of production, the industrialists, understand that they have a role in making sure that our economy and our society benefits from what they do. We've talked about this for the past 2 years now. What is the role of a CEO? Is it only to increase stockholders' wealth? Or is it also to balance the needs of stockholders who are greedy with the needs of community, suppliers, and everybody else who considers themselves a stakeholder in their businesses. More and more, we're seeing that balance come into focus. I hope that one of the dangers that Terry talked about, which is this polarization caused in part by name-calling, doesn't make the people who have said we need to be more conscious of all stakeholders revert into their corner, which is, nah, we're just going to worry about making money.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the balance that has been set in the direction that has been set over the past couple of years, and I hope that the current polarization politically doesn't cause a more economic polarization that we used to call the social contract. You know, what is the role of government? It is to protect people from government. What is, you know, what do you give up in terms of that protection? You give up some personal freedom. You know, that's the age of enlightenment way of thinking, and the whole social contract that applies to our economy is now, I think, under attack for very cheap reasons. You know, as I say, name-calling is cheap and effective, and it's up to the populace to do their research, to understand that just being called a name does not mean that you have really researched what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so the things that Terry was talking about, which are really endemic to this balance, are very, very important. In times of national crisis, we tend to tip the balance in favor of government. In times of peace, we tend to tip the balance in favor of the economy and laissez-faire. But there's one never, you know, exists without the other. And I have gotten completely off subject, which is the economy is doing great and the stock market is almost at its highs that we saw, you know, record-making highs last November. So to the extent that investors vote with their dollars, what we're seeing is a lot of optimism in the face of all this danger. And that, you know, you scratch your head and say, how can that be? But that seems to be what's going on, at least in terms of the markets.
We hear about this Santa Claus rally in December. Does some of that have to do with folks who are kind of figuring out, readjusting their distributions and capital gains and all of that?
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up. December, the Santa Claus rallies happen.
Which we might be seeing right now, right?
So what we're seeing here, to some extent, is last-minute adjustments in portfolios, especially the large portfolios, the industrial portfolios, to mitigate taxes into the next year. So, for instance, if the markets were to close in December at their very highest, it would have an implication for required minimum distributions in the following year. I'd like to see nothing more than the market kind of go down a little bit before the end of the year and then pick right up in the beginning of the new year, but it never happens that way.
Mm-hmm.
But for people who are required to convert some of their retirement savings and retirement portfolios,
The required distribution.
Mm-hmm. That is based on the closing of the market on the last day of trading in that year.
Okay.
So, and the RMD formulas have changed, actually, with the Trump tax changes. And so what was kind of a formula that took you for the rest of your life to get rid of those savings, and now more or less 10 years. So those requirements on people who have large IRA or 401k accounts have become more critical. And so some of what we're seeing in the markets is that. We also, since we've had large swings, I mean, the volatility in the market in the calendar year 2021 has been very high. As a result, people who did trading during that year have losses and they have gains. And what happens in December is market managers, investment managers, work to mitigate the gains or mitigate the losses by offsetting gains, again, with the purpose of reducing capital gains taxes. That happens very aggressively in December. That's some of what we're seeing. What I think is unpredictable is we're seeing it very close to all-time market highs and at forward-looking price-to-earnings ratios that are well above what historical norms would consider sustainable. That worries me, but it's been worrying me for so long now. I ought to ignore the worries and just enjoy the gains.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Shelley, we'll see you next Tuesday.
You bet.
All right, Buckmaster Show, midway point in our Tuesday. Our Arizona Water Quarterly Report is coming up next. Karen Caesar is in the house, ready to go on. We'll be right back with Karen.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Once a quarter here on the Buckmaster Show, we focus on Arizona's most important resource, and I believe it is water. I think most people would agree. Arizona Water Quarterly is presented by the Central Arizona Project, Your Water, Your Future. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show, Karen Caesar. Karen is the Pima County Representative on the Central Arizona Water Conservation District. Board. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing real well, and so much to unpack here over the next 10 minutes about the looming Colorado River water shortage. But first of all, let's talk about something fun. I understand you recently participated in the opening of a new CAP trail section. What's that all about?
Well, yeah, this is actually very fun. The day before Halloween, we commemorated the opening of a trailhead and Marana's portion of the CAP trail. And that is a non-motorized recreational trail, this case in Marana, where you can go out there and walk, bike, jog, even ride your horse on parts of the trail. And it's exciting because the development of the trail is a result of partnerships with local jurisdictions. In this case, it was the town of Marana that initiated this, and we worked with Marana to make this section of the trail a reality. So CAP, several of us were out there on hand to celebrate this, along with the town of Marana, Pima County, and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. They actually called it the Mad Cap Race. See what they did there?
Yeah, I saw some pictures that were posted on that. Everybody looked like they were having a good time, and I think costumes, right?
They were encouraged. It was Halloween weekend, and in the spirit of this, people were encouraged to have some fun and show up in costume to make it more of a very fun event. I actually went out there with some friends, and we all dressed like gondoliers.
Oh, so that's appropriate, being by the water, right?
Exactly, keeping with the canal theme. It was a lot of fun, and again, everybody that came together to make this trail a reality. The trails are such an important part of our outdoor lifestyle in Pima County. It also lets users get a really unique view of our canal from a different perspective.
So and are there other segments of this trail?
There are. When we're working on this, that you know, our canal is 336 miles long, and so we're working with multiple jurisdictions to create sections of the trail. And if you want to see where else there's trails that you can go see the CAP on, you can go to our website, centralarizonaproject.com, and search the CAP trail, and there's a complete map there.
All right, Karen, this impending Colorado River shortage, we've talked about it in our previous discussions. What is at stake here, Karen Caesar?
Well, and this is really turning our attention to something, you know, from the fun of the trail dedication to really our serious situation on the Colorado River. As we know, starting in January, which is just a few short weeks away, the lower Colorado River Basin is going to be in their first ever declared Tier 1 shortage. And what that means to Arizona is that's a cut of about 30% of our CAP's normal supply, which equates to about 18% of Arizona's total Colorado River supply, because we remember not only CAP, but we have on-river Colorado River water users. And it means about a little less than 8% of all of Arizona's total water use. So it's a big deal.
Let's talk a little bit, dig a little deeper into this. Hopefully there is some good news like that we had at the beginning of the program.
Well, you know, we have some good news. We are working on a lot of different solutions. You know, it's very interesting because every month, the Bureau of Reclamation looks ahead for 24 months and farther on projections. And kind of we're going to start with maybe a little bad news, and we'll roll into the good news. Some of these projections showed that the levels of Lake Mead were going to get a lot deeper than we had even planned in the drought contingency plan. So what happened starting in August, and remember it's only early December, our lower basin states, Nevada, California, of course, Arizona, along with the Bureau of Reclamation, has started to get together to see what else can we do. The result of that is something called the 500 plus plan. And that's a big deal. It's trying to leave basically an additional 500,000 acre feet of water in Lake Mead next year to stave off some of the deeper shortages.
Hmm. And I guess that, is this kind of what you're calling augmentation?
Well, augmentation is definitely seeking additional water supplies. It's a multi-pronged problem, and it has multi-pronged solutions. And so augmentation is looking at additional water to bring into the system, for example, desalinization. We are also looking at ways to conserve water, and that includes, again, leaving water. When we say conserve, and we've talked about this, locally we think conserve water, we think do low water use landscape, reduce your indoor water use, and that helps you conserve water. When we talk about conserving water on the Colorado River, we're talking about leaving lots and lots of water, large volumes in Lake Mead to keep the elevations up. And so different ways to conserve the water and you know, and basically help us keep those elevations up.
And before we get back to the 500 plan, partnerships are really key to this too.
Absolutely. You know, we can't do this alone. Arizona can't do this alone. CAP absolutely cannot do this alone. And it really is going to take a regional approach. And so, you know, for example, we recently announced a partnership with Metropolitan Water District of Southern California and the Southern Nevada Water Authority. We're exploring ways to purify and treat wastewater for reuse. And some of this for our listeners, information. These are projects that may happen in California where we participate, and then the water that's created stays nearby where they're, you know, cleansing and reusing the water. In exchange, we get some of Metropolitan Water District's Colorado River water in exchange. So using the existing infrastructures to kind of swap the water out, but participate in these really regional solutions are important.
So getting back to what you were referring as the 500 plan, this is something that could be implemented pretty much right away. The plan is still being developed, or is it going to take a while, Karen?
Well, it's going to be implemented as soon as next year, and it's another level of planning. When we did the drought contingency plan, there was a provision in there that said if the projections are going to be the Lake Mead is going to be at a certain elevation, a very low elevation, everybody had to get back together. The DCP wasn't enough. And that's what happened. The lower elevation showed up in the models. Everybody started getting back together. And we're working right now to get people to essentially voluntarily and compensated, you know, leave more water in Lake Mead than they would have normally. And so, again, regionally, the cooperation has been fantastic, and we're working on making sure that those elevations stay, because Lake Mead is the yardstick. If it goes down to lower elevations, we then trigger deeper shortages. As of now, I'll just add, you know, it's important to note with the tier one shortage, cities and tribes are not impacted. Their water supplies are not impacted. But if the levels keep dropping, then we're going to start to see cuts to those high priority water users.
And the major cuts primarily will be in the agriculture. Agricultural users will be taking the hit.
Yes. And they have known this, and we've talked about this, and that was part of the drought contingency plan. The first people to basically see the results of the reductions are going to be our agricultural users. Some of them are getting mitigated, offset mitigation. But yeah, the first cuts are definitely coming out of that pool of water.
And I think it's important, Karen, to know end this session with some water news, some facts. And this is good information, what you would suggest for those that would like to learn more about where we're going with all of this.
Well, and it's so important. I appreciate being able to, you know, to share this information, because I know a lot of people, my friends, my colleagues, people have a lot of questions about what's going on, and they might just see a little bit that's in the news. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of information, good information, for anybody that wants to, you know, avail themselves of it. We have our website. Sign up for the knowyourwaternews.com. We've got infographics. We've got lots of information on our website. And it's very easy to access, and it's very easy to understand. And it's always kept, you know, up very current. So you're not looking at 6-month-old data and information when it comes, for example, to the water levels in Lake Mead.
And again, this will be cuts to primarily agriculture, but it's not going to mean anything initially here to the cities, those of us living in the city and are living really any of the residents of Pima County.
that's correct. Right now, in a tier one shortage, there are no cuts to municipal, industrial, that's City of Tucson, Oro Valley, Marana. Anybody that has CAP water will continue to have their allocation. And what we're really all working toward is trying to protect those highest water priority users, including our tribal customers as well. So everyone's working together. Like I said, there's a lot out there. I just wish people would know that there's a lot of people working on this, and plans are being put in place, and not only plans, but contingency plans and backup plans and backups to the backup plans. And because we realize that this is an important resource, and it's something that we just can't let, you know, we can't let it get to lower levels where we're really curtailing not only our water supplies, but our hydro power generation supplies, and also, and, you know, threatening the resiliency of the Colorado River system. So we want to make sure we have a healthy, you know, resilient Colorado River system, not only for the people, but for the wildlife and the animals that you know, rely on that as well.
And kind of to summarize, the augmentation could even include desalinization, conservation of water, partnerships, and efficient ways to recover the water that we've been storing underground. I think those are four important points.
They're very important, and that's exactly right. And it just illustrates the multi-pronged solution to this complicated problem. There's not one magic bullet. There's not one magic wand we can wave to fix this. It really is all hands on deck, all options on the table, and you might get, you know, 15% of something here, 20% there, all together, it adds up to, you know, to again, making sure that we always have our renewable water from the Colorado River and we can enjoy our lifestyle that we enjoy and our quality of life.
All right, Karen Caesar, I want to wish you and everybody associated with CAP, I hope you have a wonderful, happy season, holiday season, a great new year.
Thank you so much. And on behalf of our, you know, your CAP board members, particularly I'm going to say the four Pima County board members, Pat, Marie, Mark, and myself, we wish you and your listeners a very happy holiday season.
Thank you very much, Karen. All right, we continue with the Buckmaster Show right after this.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Albernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Back with you on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. If you're looking for a nice getaway, may I suggest Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, and the weather has just been so spectacular. Great time of year here in the Southwest to do some hiking, like in the Gila National Wilderness over there in Southwest New Mexico. Start your planning by visiting Southwest New Mexico. Just spell that out, .org, for places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities. Dr. Mark Sykes with us, CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute. Big 50th year anniversary coming up in the spring. As a Tucson nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system, 34 years Mark put in on the chorus of the Arizona Opera Company. And right now, operas have kind of, because of COVID, like everything else, been sort of sidelined. But I know you kind of miss that. What a great, longest serving, I think, opera chorus member here. In Arizona.
Probably.
Yeah, great career. Anyway, your top 10 list, we are at the end of the year, and you put together a list for me. What are some of the highlights of 2021 in the world of planetary science?
Well, there's all kinds of, you know, interesting things going on. We have some natural things like this giant comet. That was discovered in 2014, but then was realized this past year that it could be 200 kilometers in diameter. Hmm. I mean, that's well farther than Tucson to Phoenix, you know. But it's not kind of it's not going to come any closer to the sun than the orbit of Saturn, just beyond the orbit of Saturn. But even at that distance, it'll be very interesting to observe.
When will that be?
I believe it is in the next year.
Okay, within a year. But as comets go, that's pretty unusual.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Have
it's
a diameter that could go up to 200 kilometers.
Yeah, I mean, most comets you see that are coming into the inner solar system are a few kilometers.
So that could make our highlight list for 2022 for sure.
It could as well. Then of course we've had missions launching this year. We've had the Lucy. Take off, and the Lucy mission is going to, it's a NASA Discovery mission that's going to fly by seven Trojan asteroids and see what these guys look like. Trojans are thought to have been captured from objects that had formed further out, like at the orbit of Uranus and Neptune, that then got scattered in and captured by Jupiter early in the solar system.
Outside the traditional asteroid belt,
is that what you're saying? Yeah, there's a lot of, the early solar system was a pretty dynamic place where a lot of stuff was moving around, including the giant planets.
There was a lot of Mars news, and Planetary Science Institute had some news in that regard as well.
Yeah, well
concerning the red planet.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of things on Mars. Of course, we got
volcanoes.
We have the helicopter on Mars now, which has been it's a real hoot to watch, and it was just a purely experimental thing. But it's worked out really well, and it's been able to help guide the Perseverance rover to where to go next and map out, allow people to create three-dimensional models of the surface to know where it can and can't go and identify some interesting-looking stuff to investigate. It was discovered this past year that Mars has a liquid core that extends out almost half of its radius. And that might play into... Another discovery by one of our people that there may be active volcanism on Mars that has taken place in the last 50,000 years.
And 50,000 years in your business.
Oh, that's like yesterday.
I mean, 50,000 years, that's pretty cool.
Well, we think about, volcanoes erupting in the Cascades over the last 10,000 years is nothing.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, so interesting stuff about Mars, even craters that could have caused some flooding.
Right. Early, 3.5 billion years ago, Mars was a wetter place, and there's evidence that, the impact craters on the surface, a lot of them filled up with water to the point that it spilled over the rim and caused surges of flooding, you know, over the surface. And something that wasn't on my list but I thought was interesting was discovery that there's areas, large areas of Mars that have these mega ripples on the surface, you know, like sand dunes,
but they're
like a few meters tall and wider. And a lot of things that we see on the surface of Mars, we tend to think of as it's been there for billions of years.
Yeah.
But our scientists measured this stuff moving, you know, over the course of years.
Moving sand dunes on Mars?
Yeah, because of the winds and things that are not like you see on the Martian, the movie, but you know, much gentler. But a lot of the features we see on Mars today are recent. You know, they're due to these processes like, you know, wind and freezing and cooling and warming and
again, we think of Mars as being this kind of a dead planet, mm-hmm. but you're saying there's movement, there's things are happening.
Yeah, my gosh, there's movement on the surface. There may be volcanoes.
So
you know what's next.
Yeah, well, we should mention also since we saw you last, the DART mission was launched in November to demonstrate the impact. To try to, I guess, eventually be able to deflect an asteroid?
Yeah, we worry about what to do if we see something coming at us.
Yeah.
There used to be a bunch of meetings on this back in the, like, in the 90s or so, and I remember Ed Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, of course. Advocating for we send a nuke out there and we take care of the business that way.
Right.
Which, you know, and there are options where that might be the only possibility to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But if we discover something that's going to hit us far enough in advance,
mm-hmm.
You don't have to change its velocity by very much. If you could slow it down just a little bit, then by the time it gets to the Earth's location, the Earth will have moved from the earlier position it was expected to be, and it just passes us by.
Mm-hmm.
And so the DART mission was designed to test this technique by hitting a small satellite around a small near-Earth asteroid and see what the difference in the motion of the satellite is. Now, originally, there was supposed to be a European spacecraft there at the same time to watch the impact and then measure the change in the satellite orbits. And that we're going to have to do it remotely from the ground, which will be a far more difficult challenge. And the European spacecraft is supposedly going to be there several years later. But
was that a financial thing? They couldn't meet the deadline?
it's just a planning thing. Yeah. I mean, we have held up Europe on many occasions in the past.
Measuring that on the ground is going to be a lot difficult.
It's going to be very difficult, but the Europeans are still planning to send a spacecraft there. It will be there a few years later after the impact. But, you know, these changes are small enough that when the spacecraft gets there, then I think that we could actually use its measurements of where it is then, several years later, to calibrate, well, how much oomph did it get? And there's another complexity, too. It's not just changes the orbit, but it also changes its spin state.
Mm.
And so it'll be, you know, depending on where it hits, it's going to cause a rotation on the thing, too. So that'll be an important factor.
Mark Sykes, CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute, based in Tucson. Their website is psi.edu. Mark, have a great holiday season, okay?
You too,
it's always great to see you. See you in 2022. On behalf of Dr. Sykes, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.